The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. We're broadcasting live from the sunny climes of Letterkenny in County Donegal in the northwest of Ireland. And it's good to be here and it's good to have you on the programme. I hope you're doing very well indeed, and a safe journey home for all of the Highland crew over in Monaco. We've got a very busy couple of hours for you. We're going to be live from the picket line as Abhlanc strike begins today. You don't see it too often, and hopefully it's not often we see it going forward too. We need a resolution to this potential life-death situation. Not wishing to exaggerate it, but our ambulance service is such a critical lifeline that if it's in any way reduced, of course, you have to worry about the consequences of that. We've got Community Garda information coming up for you after 10 o'clock as well, where we'll bring you the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána in Donegal first here on The Greg Hughes Show. And we invite you to get in contact with us with whatever you wish to talk about. 086 60 25 000, that's your WhatsApp and your text number, 086 60 25 000. You can give us a call too on 07491 25 000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And you know, we really do hope that we get through today, through this ambulance strike, with a minimum of fuss, but perhaps maybe you can be our eyes and ears on the ground if you are out there. And it would probably be in a very distressing or uncomfortable situation for you. But if you've had any engagement or have any engagement with the ambulance service over the course of the morning, please let us know so we can get a sense of the potential impacts here. But we'll be crossing to our reporter, Donna Marie Doherty, to the picket line in the not too distant future to get an update there. Well, just reading from the Irish Times, a 24-hour strike by ambulance staff today will pose a risk to patient safety, but emergency cover will be in place and patients in need of urgent medical assistance can still contact 999 or 112. That's according to the National Ambulance Service. NAS Clinical Director Dr. Cathal O'Donnell said the day would be very challenging for the service, with more than half of staff normally rostered to work expected to be out on strike. However, he said additional clinical staff are being drafted in to provide advice over the phone. Managers who are clinicians will be assisting on calls, and some private services will be used. Now, this depends on where you are in the country. Obviously, access to private services might be dependent on what part of the Republic you're in, etc., etc. But please don't second guess it. If you have an emergency, call the ambulance service. I don't want to do anything that would discourage that. As I say, we'll be getting our own local angle on that very, very shortly. Keir Starmer is a dead man walking at this point, politically, of course, I should say. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer pledged yesterday to prove the doubters wrong as he struggles to fight demands to resign after devastating local election results. I'm not sure he'll be in position by the end of this programme. Certainly, if it was at the old time, I don't think he would be. Mr. Starmer said that he could or would face up to the big challenges and restore hope to his country, in part by forging closer ties with the EU 6 years after Brexit. I know I have my doubters and I know I need to prove them wrong, and I will, he said during a speech in London to kickstart the fight back against detractors. It did not appear to have the intended effect, though. In the hours after the speech, a steady stream of Labour MPs spoke to the press or posted on social media saying he should resign now or soon. So they want him really to outline his departure. The last figure I saw, it was upwards of 80 MPs who said, look, you have to go. And you can't, once your party moves against you like that, you are in bother. And it's just really, I think, at this point, how he exits. Does he just pull the pin straight away, trigger a leadership competition? Or does he say, look, I'll stay in situ for a certain amount of time? Either way, it would be one of the biggest escapes in political history if he manages to survive that at all. The fuel crisis has been good for the public coffers, the public finances. The Irish Independent reports that the government's on track to receive bumper carbon tax revenue this year, even without further increases to the green levy. The Exchequer is expected to benefit from an extra €186 million in carbon tax revenue compared with last year. After significant pressure during the fuel protests and blockades. The government conceded on carbon tax and delayed the planned increase in the levy this month until the budget in October. Finance Minister and Taoiseach Simon Harris has revealed that the carbon tax brought in $340.6 million in the first 3 months of 26. This would equal $1.362 million over the course of the year, compared with the total of $1.176 million in 2025. Another story out of RTE, an estimated €855,000 is to be spent over the next 5 years on consultants to help RTE with the distribution of millions of euro generated by the Late Late Toy Show. This is feels to me like a crazy situation. I don't know what you listeners think, but I mean, you know, a lot of people would have had to donate to get to €855,000, which will be given to consultants to decide how to spread the rest of the money. There has to be a better use of this money. It really is crazy, the amount of money that's spent. It's like, as I mentioned there, Darkness into Light. I'm not punching down on it. That's fine. If you want to support it, that's completely up to you. But 34% of the money raised goes into raising money. So a third of all the money that's raised goes into raising the money the next year. That seems strange to me. And to spend €855,000 to spend the money you donated to the Late Late Toy Show, that also doesn't seem to make sense to me. Surely you go in advance of this and say, look, this is for charity. Are there any people that would actually, who are competent and professional, that would distribute this money in a charitable way, i.e. maybe even, dare I say it, for free? But instead, you know, people are going to be richer to the tune of €855,000 distributing your generosity. This is not Toy Show money. This is your money because you donated it. Well, in the tender published yesterday, RTE stated it is seeking a firm with in-depth charity and community sector knowledge to provide philanthropy consultancy and grant distribution services and a flexible angle and cost-effective approach to grant assessment and grant distribution. The tender confirms that the cost of grant distribution will be deducted from the fund. Okay, so there you go. 855 grand to distribute that Toy Show money. We might be talking about this, getting a local angle a little later on. Rural pubs are facing extinction unless the government throws them a budget lifeline. That is the stark warning delivered today from the Vintners Federation of Ireland, who are demanding immediate intervention in Budget 2027 to stop the devastation of the beloved local watering hole. Representing more than 3,500 publicans across the length and breadth of the country, the VFI has declared that the pubs at the heart of rural communities face an existential threat to their ongoing commercial sustainability and survival from rising costs. All businesses are facing rising costs. But what do you think about this? And I'm just throwing this out there here for a discussion point. Is it? Could you argue that we've had too many pubs for a long time? That our drinking habits were different years ago? That young people now, you know, they're looking to get ripped and in great shape for the summer, and they're going to the personal trainer or they're going to the gym and not the pub. Is it possible that the drinking culture in this country has changed to the point whereby the amount of pubs that are there now, and they have reduced significantly over the last number of years, that the amount of pubs there now are too many? That really the truth is that, you know, look at Diageo, they're the people supplying you the pints. Look at Schweppes and all the other companies. You know, I presume some of the biggest input costs are through drink. Look at Sky Sports and BT Sports and how much they're charging you, or GEA Plus. Look how much they're charging you to show games. Look at the cost of insurance. You know, all of these input costs are from the private sector. Should, as I say, I don't have an opinion on this, I'm asking the question, but should the taxpayer really be bailing out these industries whereby they're getting taken to the cleaners by all the organisations that I talk of, insurance companies, the beer and soft drink suppliers, I've been in some multi-billion euro establishments that are using dodgy boxes for football, so obviously the cost must be huge. But, you know, and then, of course, I think younger people aren't drinking as much as they used to in the past. So maybe we can't sustain all the pubs that are out there. Maybe that's a fact of life. Or maybe They're an incredibly important part of tourism life, of social life. It's our way to communicate with each other, and that they're being shafted left, right and centre, and the government should do much more to keep them in business. I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, because often every year coming up to budget year, we hear from different industries saying, look, we need the support here, we need the support there. But maybe the country's changing. Maybe this country is changing and we are going to see less pubs. Look at nightclubs, for an example. You know, I mean, how many nightclubs are there now? It used to be nightclubs everywhere, and now they're very thin on the ground. Lastly, Defiant Dublin Rose, Suad Moog has Suad Moog has hit back at the cruel online trolls who bombarded her with racist abuse following her historic win, declaring she will not let the hate train derail her dreams. The capital's newly crowned representative for the 2026 Rose of Tralee Festival has been subjected to a barrage of toxic comments questioning her Irishness and her Somali heritage. And I've noticed this, if there's a person of colour that is either playing football, we've seen it in athletics, and now being selected as one of the Rose of Tralee, it does seem to be, and people that, you know, that actually aren't even on Anonymous, that do take issue with this and do post very hurtful and hateful things on social media. But any competition, any local authority, any thing in life surely should fairly reflect society, hold a mirror up to society and all the people that are within it. So why shouldn't we have a broader representation? I don't think we should do it for tokenism, or I don't think we should do it to be woke, and I don't think that is not the motivation in these situations. In the past, maybe, I think sometimes the Rose of Tralee has been box ticking the trends, but in terms of us as a country and what we are and where we're at, isn't it terrible that someone, just because they have a different coloured skin, will have their Irishness questioned, even though they're born and bred in this country? We wouldn't expect that wherever we went, you know, we really wouldn't. So why should we do that? I mean, we're a good country, we're good people, and it's horrible to see the amount of hatred that is out there, and it's been sort of conflated with people's general concerns about other social conversations that have been happening. But what's happening is just Irish people who might look a little bit different to Irish people looked 100 years ago are now being the subject to abuse. I don't think we want to be like that, and I don't think we should be like that. Greg, here is an amusing new government term, budgetary oversight group. I wonder what their remit will be. Where was this group during the construction of the children's hospital, the various bike sheds, the government security hut, the photographer or the photocopier, the electric buses that were purchased without charging stations? I could go on, but it brings to light just how careless the government is with public money. But I presume that the budgetary oversight group is there to try and maybe perhaps correct wrongs of the past. Right, now, we were talking yesterday about progress on the TEN-T project, listening to the councillor claiming Donegal County Council are going to spend €1 billion on the roads. This is the Cathaoirleach councillor Paul Canning. It would fit the council better to fix the mica pyrotite problem first. Again, what I will say is, A, it's not the council spending the money. It's a national spend, but also the money is there for both. Right. So if we start sort of putting things daisy chaining it, I understand where you're coming from. There's no reason why we in Donegal don't deserve to have the houses fixed that are crumbling. But at the same time, do the road, because they both need to be going. A caller said, good news, TEN-T is a pan-European rollout of military-grade transport networks. I stress military. To my knowledge, we can drive to wherever we want to our beautiful county, but not let's rip up the fields, hedgerows and woodlands. Let's block the rivers and eliminate the indigenous wildlife so we can get a bridge to nowhere and get there 10 minutes faster. Stevie, I appreciate where you're coming from. And it is a... it's a nice position that you're coming at this from, but unfortunately it doesn't necessarily align with the reality of life. Greg, could you ask Donegal County Council when they're going to sort out the new ramp on the Cockhill Road, Buncrana? It's far too high and far too sharp. It's terrible on a car and no markings or signs to say it's there. How do the council get away with the likes of this? Wowzers, I hadn't heard about that one before. Throw it out to other listeners as well. I think this is the first time I've heard of this new ramp on the Cockhill Road. I think really it's very important that ramps are very clearly Very clearly signposted so we can see. I can get from the Polestar to Derry in the same time as it takes to travel from Arena 7 to the Polestar. Meanwhile, our council continue constructing cycle lanes, the width of runways in Letterkenny for non-existent cyclists. Scrap the green agenda and build the bridge. Again, this is another situation, though, of maybe there's a timing issue, but these two things are designed to work hand in hand. I was driving to Dunfanaghy on the bank holiday weekend and no garage had the air working. How can this be a tourist area with none of the air pumps working? What happens if you get a flat tyre? Well, I haven't really come across that. I don't generally use them too often, but now you have to pay, don't you? Well, generally speaking, you have to pay with the big garages anyway. I'm not quite sure. It's always good to have a compressor in the back of your car too, though. And they are, there was a time where you get them for like $12.99, and you know the ones where they sort of rattle all over the place when you're trying to charge your wheel, but there's much better ones out there now. Comment, recongestion at the hospital car park. Seamus is a taxi driver, so is at the hospital often. A new one-way system would definitely help going up around the back of the hospital and back down. I've been down the hospital quite a bit lately, and it is, there's no parking there, hardly at all left. I was down there mid-afternoon yesterday, early afternoon. Every single car park space I could see anyway taken at the front of the hospital, every single car park taken at the rear of the hospital. Over outside St. Connell's, not a parking space to be had. Luckily, someone pulled out and I got in. God knows what it's like. I know what it's like, but I'm throwing it out there for people visiting the hospital. I have to go in and out quite a bit. Or the staff there, in terms of where they can park. And I thought there seems to be a bit of work going down at the car park at the side of the A&E. And I thought, all right, they're extending the car park. No, apparently they're laying gas pipes or something. So I don't know what the story is there. Last one just before a break, or might squeeze another one in. Just looking for some opinions from other parents regarding after-school childcare fees during school holidays. An after-school service has advised that if children do not attend during holiday periods, parents are still expected to pay the usual weekly fee in order to keep their place for when school returns. Even reducing hours apparently would not change the amount payable. I completely understand that services need to cover costs and hold places, and I would have no issue paying a reasonable retainer fee, but paying full fees for childcare that is not being used feels very financially very difficult financially, especially with the current cost of living. Just wondering if this is considered normal practice now and how other parents feel about it. No negativity towards the service, just genuinely curious about other people's experience and opinions. Well, I don't know a great deal about this area. My understanding is that it's about numbers, and they receive supports from various elements of the government, and they have to have the numbers, and you can't drop in and drop out of it. It's not a drop-off, pick-up babysitting service, and I'm not saying you're saying that. It is a service, and they have to have a certain amount of people that are part of it, and then they apply, presumably, I think this is true, they apply and then they get funding, and then that helps supports the service. But then they also have to presume there's no fiddling going on and that those kids are there, that they're claiming that they are there. So I think that is really the situation where it's at. And some of these services are amazing. But I think for logistic reasons, you can't dip in out. But if anyone is in there in that sector and can just clarify if I'm right in that regard or not, please let us know. 086 60 25,000. My daughter and her friends were in Main Street Muff between food. Food Guru and the Squealing Pig when a young girl approached them and asked, could she stand with them and wait for her mum? A man had been talking to her and wouldn't leave her alone. The girl's mum collected her, and the man then approached my daughter, saying that she's pretty. My daughter told him they're only 14 and could he get lost. He stayed, saying they were very beautiful. My daughter shouted at him to get lost, and he did. This fellow was a man in his 30s, a tracksuit and had a backpack on. The caller says, I'm just concerned for the safety of my child and others, and I feel maybe parents might need to be a bit more aware before someone gets hurt. This could be innocent. I don't think there's any situation where a 30-year-old man going up and speak to 14-year-olds is innocent. And I think certainly once he's told to go away and he continues to speak to them, that is completely the opposite of innocence. And I appreciate you perhaps being a little bit forgiven, playing devil's advocate, but no. But the caller says this could be innocent, but when they told him their age, he should have left. Yeah, okay. That is wrong on so many levels. I'm not sure maybe if it's a cultural thing where maybe people from outside of Ireland don't necessarily realise, you know, in some cases, very rare cases, you know, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate, what is when someone is comfortable or uncomfortable, or what the age of consent is, or what have you. I don't know, but it ain't good enough. And I'm not sure if there's been more of this in that area or elsewhere, but it is something that needs to be called out. Right, just to remind you of the contact details, 08660 25000. That's our WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25000. Right, as I mentioned a little earlier on, that 24-hour strike action by ambulance drivers, members of SIPTU and Unite Unions has begun now. Donna Marie, we have you back there. Sorry about that. How are you keeping now? We also have with us Sean Marley, who is, of course, a paramedic. Sean, sorry about the inconvenience there. Just remind our listeners as to why you feel your colleagues and yourself had to take this action.
Well, Greg, I started an ambulance service 25 years ago. And we started out basically as a transport service, that time just from taking patients from home to hospital. Like, and we have upskilled now for since 2006 right up until to the present date. We've done a lot of upskilling and we're doing a lot more skills and taking people at home and taking people in the ambulance and a better outcome for the patient. But we're not being recognised for this at all.
Even though there have been independent recommendations that you should?
There has been recommendations that we should. There was a McHugh-McCrabb report that the HSE initiated themselves. They initiated that commission and they recommended that we should be paid more. And at that stage then the HSE seemed to walk away. The National Ambulance Service seemed to walk away from the government, whatever the case may be. They did offer us a few different deals, but they were taking everything that we fought for the last 20 years off us to give us that. So it was really cost neutral, like, but they were giving us in one hand and not in the other, like, away in the other.
I think one of the major gripes is that it's about equality and equal pay for people doing equal work in other parts of the health service.
That's correct, yeah.
What kind of cover is there for Donegal, Sean, today, as much as you are aware, or is that the National Ambulance Service's responsibility? Do you know what cover we have compared to what ordinarily would be there?
Yeah, we have four ambulances on for Donegal today. And we have a paediatric ambulance written to go as well. But we have other contingency plans in place should they need a raise.
Obviously, this is one day of action today. There's talk of elevating the action going forward. The NAS told us yesterday that they and the HSE are ready to get back around the table with SIPTU and Unite. What do you believe could defer this action to get those talks underway and to come to an agreeable agreement?
The last I heard from our senior union was that the National Ambulance Service or the government has walked away from us and said we'd contact you, so they haven't contacted us.
Right. Okay. Well, listen. You can hand those headphones back to Donna Marie. Thank you very much indeed, Sean Marley, who's paramedic. We do appreciate your time. We'll have more from Donna Marie from the picket line a little later on in the programme. You were saying a little earlier on, Donna Marie, just describing the scene down there for us.
Yeah, so there's around 15 to 20 paramedics out at the moment, and there seems to be great support from all the traffic going by. There's lots of, you know, like beeping of the horns and things like that there. And actually some of the students who are walking up to school had like biscuits and things with them and were offering them out. The morale at the moment is fairly good. So it is, you know, whenever I was speaking to Sean as well, he was saying that, you know, if I suppose the HSE doesn't meet them halfway, you know, the action will continue on. So it will. So, you know, hopefully that everyone here is just hoping that they'll get what they want. And you know, a lot of the paramedics here have been working for, you know, years and years and years, and the scope of their job isn't what it was at the start. And, you know, that needs to be recognized. And as a gender you're saying yourself there, whenever you had started out, the training was it around 2 months, 7 weeks?
No, 6 weeks.
6 weeks. And to do that now, it's 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, thank you for that analysis. Thank you very much as well, Sean. And we'll have more audio, more visual from the picket lines later on. Well, actually, you know, throughout the course of the day here on Highland Radio. Read that Buncrana Road. Well, Greg, read the new ramp on Cockhill Road. The plastic hasn't been taken off the signs yet and it hasn't been painted. That's after 2 weeks. Most people don't see it and visitors to the area will definitely not know it's there. Well, listen, you know, I presume the local authority could find itself on the hook for that if there's any damage caused. So I imagine that needs to be rectified just as soon as is possible. Why is the ring road not being done? This would solve the problem long term. I don't think that's just on the cards at the moment. Right. We're going to Barry Mallett now, who's from Guardian of the Faith YouTube channel. Thank you very much indeed for your time. How are you keeping, Barry?
Not too bad, Greg. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, never a chore.
You say that to all the guys and girls. Derry is set to be the location of the first ever worldwide Marian procession this June. Give us the background to that and, of course, talk us through the significance of that for the region, Barry.
Definitely. Well, for Irish history, as we know, ever since the siege of Derry in 1613, when, as we know, the Londoners built the walled city, all the Catholics in the city were kicked out, basically, priests, nuns, and then, as we know, became supposedly Londonderry. Well, the significance of the first a worldwide Eucharistic procession that happened last year in November 2025 was the first time we had a Eucharistic procession through the centre of the city in 400 years. And so it was monumental, but it was a beautiful event because, look, it's a call to all Christians, Catholic, Protestants, everyone, to come together, to unite together, and come out and they process our Eucharistic King throughout the streets. We had one in November 2025 under Archbishop Eamon Martin's full blessing and our local bishop, Bishop Donald McCone here in Derry. We had 7,000 people turn up. But what happened was it happened simultaneously in 70 parishes around six continents, and this has never happened before. And then we followed it on then in November 2025 at the Feast of Christ the King. We carried it on and we had another Eucharistic procession led by our Bishop, Bishop Donald McCone. About 7,000 people turned up and it happened this time in 150 parishes collectively around the world through six continents. Now, why is that so important is because trying to organize two churches to try and organize anything together is so difficult. So this shows you this was definitely Our Lady's work. Now, in the procession in November 2025, what we did was we put the bishop and the clergy on three boats and got them to go up and down the Foyle River and bless the river. Now, sadly, the reason being why is that over the last 30 years, there has been, this is Foyle Search and Rescue's statistics, that there was 6,000 attempted suicides in the Foyle River. And that's a shockingly high statistic. Now, since the procession, there has only been one fatality since November 2025. So it shows you how efficacious they are. And coupled with that, if you go back to the time of St. Patrick in 433, St. Patrick performed a spiritual exorcism of the land. When they say that St. Patrick got rid of the snakes, there was no snakes. It's too cold. They love
here. Just in relation to something, pick up something there. You said that you connected the amount of people that have died on the full bridge in two different periods. You connected that to what?
Over the last 30 years, there's been 6,000 attempted suicides, yes, in the city.
okay,
in the
right.
city.
Yeah.
And then, because we get the bishop on the boat and the clergy, three boats, and went up and down the river and play and prayed St. Benedict prayers. And what we're saying is that since the procession, the next day after the procession, somebody threw themselves off the bridge, hit the water, changed his mind, and swam out. And since the procession, there has only been one fatality. Whereas if you look at the statistics of, if you look at the statistics of, say, 6,000 people over 30 years, that works at 200 people a year,
yeah,
which is averaging about 2 people a day.
OK, I don't want to get caught up on that, but there's an awful lot of effort ongoing to try and by good people on land as well. I get you to try and reduce those numbers and get earlier interventions. Do you think the fact that this is a call to Christians is an opportunity really maybe for the people of Northern Ireland or Ireland to put out a message of unity there? Because if you hear coverage or conversation about Northern Ireland, it's probably not really reflective of the reality, but it still feels, you know, quite divisive. Is this an opportunity really to say, well, you know what, this is the other side, or this is the real NI, whereby, you know, you'll always have extreme elements in any groups or people with very hardened views, but the reality is there's more that we have in common than not.
Definitely. Great, great point. And as I kept saying to somebody there recently, we're all Christian. We believe in the same God. And what we have to do is it's time for Christians to come together and join together. Now, to join together and walk together in unity, because this the intentions of the procession are for world peace, to bring people together. There's 5 different intentions of the procession. And in the last 2 processions that we have had, the amount of people coming out on the streets that would never normally see a Eucharistic procession before. And the truth is, Greg, if you take a look at our youth now, at the things that are attacking our youth throughout the whole of Christendom, throughout the whole world, it's a time so many people have lost hope. And if you lose hope, you lose faith. And I think it's a time now, look, we know the history of Ireland, but it's time to forget about the past. It's a time to look forward to the future. It's a time to unite. Because, as I say, if you lose faith, you lose hope. And if you lose hope, you lose faith. And I think everybody out there is searching for something. Now, we all in the past have went down the wrong tributaries of drink, drugs, women, this, that, you know. And I think faith is something that can unite everybody together. It may have been divisive in the past, but the truth is, I've seen many Protestants and many Catholics, good friends of mine, uniting together and walking in these walks together. And I think it's that time now.
So when is the event so people can mark their diaries if it's something that interests them?
Okay. Well, what it is it's happening on Saturday the 13th of June, the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. It's a worldwide Marian procession. It's already now happening in 140 parishes collectively around the world. And we have 8 of the world Marian shrines, like Knock, Fatima, Medjugorje, Lourdes, all household names are all joining on around the world. It's been led by our local bishop. And this is a call for everyone from the four corners of Ireland to come to Derry Saturday the 13th of June. And we're inviting a lot of children, because the last procession we had a lot of schools involved. And this time we're inviting as many children as possible to come and join in unity. It's a day of love, a day of hope, and a day of celebration.
Yeah, okay. Listen, thank you very much for that, Barry. Thank you for coming on the programme. And it'll be interesting. It's a huge number is estimated to be arriving into the city for that. That's Barry Mallett there from Guardians of the Faith YouTube channel. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. The government don't care about tourism. This is on the cost of living, maybe talking about pubs and what have you. The government don't care about tourism, and they don't care about the social life of rural dwellers, because they don't want people living in rural areas but would prefer us all to be into towns. I think the last part of that's true. I think definitely if you look at development plans, they seem to be more to corral people into more urban areas. I think tourism is important. Rural social life with the closure of post office, Garda stations, pubs, perhaps not so much. So I think you're in the money, you're in the ballpark there. A caller says increased drug use is obviously affecting pubs, as It's transport as it's transport to and from being expensive, available to society has changed big time. Yeah, I understand, and we've got evidence about how many people are taking drugs. I think also too we have to factor in that some younger people are just choosing cleaner lifestyles. If you look at the statistics, whilst we might see an increase in drug use, a reduction in alcohol use, overall there's a reduction in substance use across the whole young population, if that makes sense. So I think there's an awful lot of people, young people, and I know in my own house as well, far more interested in, you know, going to the gym, going to the PT, football, probably looking good, you know, come summertime. Right, one last one here before the break. The government are not addressing the different social mores of refugees. As a disabled person, I often experience rudeness and bad behaviour from people from outside of Ireland, especially people from certain countries who see the disabled as less than themselves. Again, someone perhaps generally making broad brushstrokes. But I mean, you know, that's a person's lived experience as well. But again, I don't think we should necessarily judge everyone or an entire nation. Like a caller says here, and this is kind of commentary you get in social media. Good morning, Greg. That lady's parents are Somalian. She may have been born here, but that doesn't make her Irish. And then they go on to make some horrendous remark about being born in a stable and horses and pigs and all that kind of stuff. So what we're saying then is, you know, we left this country in huge numbers over the course of our history. So say, for instance, my parents, you know, I was born in England and my partner was born in England. So say we're born in England because our parents moved out there, which this is a very common Irish story, by the way, particularly here in Donegal, England, most Scotland here in the northwest. So just to be clear, so if I were born in England and my partner were born in England, or I was born in Scotland and my partner was born in Scotland, and we have a boy born here, are you saying because Jesus was born in a stable, it doesn't make him a horse? Are you saying that my child wouldn't be Irish? Just to be clear, is that what we're saying here? Because then that, obviously, if you say that, then that makes your point, and of course, and that's something you believe. So just to that texter, your number 808, if I'm born in England, my partner's born in Scotland, and our son's born in Donegal, are you saying he's not Irish? Text us back, 086 60 25,000. Just be interested in your point of view in relation to that. And to be honest, if it's your view, it's your view. I'm not taking issue with it. If that's what you think, that's what you think. I will not lose any sleep in relation to it. Now, a planning application has been lodged with Donegal County Council for a substantial extension to McCafferty's Bar in Donegal Town. And I believe this is the one on the corner opposite the Bank Bar, former Ulster Bank. Councillor Jimmy Brogan is calling for a public consultation to be held before any planning permission is granted. Good morning to you, Jimmy. Thanks for joining us. Sorry, Jimmy, one second. Now, good morning to you, Jimmy. I had a problem with my phone line. How are you this morning?
Very well, Greg. How's yourself?
Good, good, good. Right, so why do you believe there needs to be a public consultation?
Well, listen, McCafferty's already has two bars in Donegal Town on the same street. And now they're looking at an extension of one of the bars, which will basically take up most of Quay Street and Donegal Town, like, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, I have nothing against McCafferty's, but I think it's just it'll you know, Donegal's a very historic town. It's a very old market town, like, you know, basically it's known for the castle and the Hanweaven. We have McGee's and different shops like that there, and it's a place that people can come and explore the rest of the Northwest. But McCafferty's, you know, they're got very large, very quick, you know, and like I say, they had the place where it was their Connell Bar originally, and they bought the place next door. They have a pub there. Then last Christmas, they opened Dom's Pier 1 down at the bottom of the same street,
which was lying empty.
Which was lying empty. I've nothing against
no,
the open
no,
bars,
and
but,
I'm not being argumentative. But I would have thought for a town that's reinventing itself and has seen a huge boost in tourism, I would have thought this is fantastic news, but you see it differently.
It's just like a lot of the people who come to McCafferty's, and I've not nothing against anybody or what they do, but a lot of people come to McCafferty's, they come on buses on Friday night or Saturday night, and listen, they spend their time in Donegal Town, but they spend their time in the one place in Donegal Town. And then they go to the chip shops, whatever, is on the way home, and get back on the bus and head off again, you know. We have a lot of people that come to Donegal Town, stay in Donegal Town, and they like the quiet atmosphere. You know, you have traditional music in some of the pubs, you have quiet pubs, you have pubs that always had live bands. You know, remember myself years ago, the Abbey Hotel, it, you know, was very busy on a Saturday night. Now McCafferty's is very busy, and fair play to them. Let you know, let them have it. It's great to have somewhere for young people.
But the Abbey's, the Abbey Hotel's packed. The Abbey Hotel's packed every other weekend with country weekends.
Yeah, but they're not. The difference is they're not taking over the whole of the of the street. You know, if you look at the.
As I say, I'm not being argumentative, but if you start at the left of the Central Hotel and you go all the way to the right of the Abbey Hotel, that pretty much is that side of town.
Yeah, but they're not all offering the same thing. You know, right. The Central Hotel has the swimming pool, and it has a small bar with you can go in for a quiet drink. And the Abbey then has the country weekends, like, you know, and other pubs of different things. But I just feel that, you know, and as well as that too, when they took over Dom's, you know, I just personally think the outside of it looks hideous. You've all these big cigarette signs and stuff like that, you know, and it's very...
You're on about the old school signs, aren't you? You're on about
It's very London, it's very plasticky, it's not traditional what you look
but
for
this
in traditional
is your,
Donegal Town.
This is your personal opinion though, Jimmy. Like, this is... When we talk about the economy of Donegal Town and its growth... I mean, you paint a picture that they just come in and then leave. You know, accommodation is at a premium in and around Donegal Town now. The ice cream shops, the coffee shops, McGee's Calf, all the other shops around the town, they're seeing all footfall that arguably wouldn't be there without this type of development. On the scale, it was there, don't get me wrong.
Arguably, that's correct, because I would argue that this kind of development will not bring nothing to McGee's. Bring nothing to the ice cream shop. It'll bring nothing to the owner design or any of the restaurants around Donegal Town. It'll bring a lot of people to Donegal Town on a Friday night and a Saturday night.
Yeah.
But they leave again later on a Friday night and Saturday night.
But so we don't know that,
Jimmy.
Well, yeah, but we don't know that.
We can only go by what we do know.
I know, but you're asking for a public consultation on what you suppose is, like, anyone I know to Donegal Town stays overnight.
Yeah, but I'm not on my own. Like, there's a lot of people from Donegal Town.
Yeah, okay.
At the end of the day, the people who grew up in Donegal Town, people who live in Donegal Town, have businesses in Donegal Town, some of them have been there all their lives. Some of them have been there for, the family's been there for generations. Mm. I think they should have a say.
I don't disagree with you, but I mean, as you know, I'm from that area, and I've gone from the age of 8 seeing people objecting to everything. I remember being at a town hall meeting in the John Bosco Centre, must be 30 years ago, when they were trying to get Tesco into Donegal Town, and people were objecting because they were afraid it would depopulate the centre of the town. Like, planning objections have been a theme. Like, they're extending, as far as I'm aware, and I've nothing to do with the company, and I don't even go out in Donegal Town, but they're extending the pub into a Bookies. So it's one less Bookies. Is that not good?
No. Well, the Bookies have been there. I've probably been there once in my life. But, like, at the end of the day, it's another business that's going to close. And I've nothing against Bookies either. Like, you know, but I don't see why.
I wouldn't be a fan.
Don't feel that plastic McCafferty's sort of sign the whole way up Quay Street is going to be a positive thing.
Okay, too much too soon, yeah. And he don't like the decor.
And I'm not objecting to it. I'm just opening the conversation. Okay. You know, a lot of people in Donegal Town have contacted me to say that they're not happy with.
Well, let's throw it out there. Let's throw it out there, Jimmy. No, exactly. And you're there to speak to your constituents and to represent them. And no one's criticising you for that. I hope you don't believe I am, but we have to have a convo and look at different points of perspectives. Thanks, Jimmy. And we contacted McCafferty's for comment in relation to that by as well. Anything to say in relation to that? 086 60 25,000.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yeah, a caller says, good morning, Greg. The ring road around Letterkenny was designed and given the go-ahead back in the early 90s, long before the housing estates were built along the route and prevented the building of the ring road. It was a case of one hand not telling the other. Thank you for that insight. Greg, that was a very popular Roscommon victory last Sunday. A young team playing a lovely brand of football against a physically stronger, more experienced Galway team. They are an inspiration for all smaller counties, and the epic celebrations afterwards was the perfect answer to those wishing to scrap the provincial championship. Indeed, you know, like sometimes in your, sometimes in our, and it's in life generally, in our sort of desire to improve or to be more commercial or to be more inclusive, you can change something and lose its actual spirit or what made it great in the first place. And I think you're right there. Ireland had a much warmer climate with much higher sea levels around the island back in the day. There may have been snakes, and there was Burberry apes remains found here in Ireland, along with other species of animals that would be found in a much warmer climate. That's to do with the weather, I presume. I don't know if that's, you're saying climate is cyclical or whatever. I don't know. Let us know. Interesting points, though. Donegal Town, Greg, enjoy the show. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. I love Donegal Town. I used to go over quite often for the night, stayed over, but the hotels now are so expensive that they feel that is not possible. There should have been public consultation on McCafferty starting glamping beside the pub in Letterman Ward 2. No sign was obvious at the location. Where will the sewage go? Well, that's up to the planning regulations, and I've absolutely no doubt all planning guidelines were followed there. I agree with Jimmy. It's too much. Key Street is going to be a green street. I get where you're coming from, right? And you know, I've literally no skin in the game. I don't know anyone associated with that chain at all that I'm aware of. But I go down to Galway and you go into certain streets, you know, and they have a theme. And that's not unusual. I think really the historical centre of Donegal Town is long gone, whether people like it or not. Don't forget, I'm old enough to remember we parked on the diamond there. That was a blooming nightmare. But we parked on the diamond there, and the Donegal Town of that era was very similar to what it was 100, 110, 20, 30 years ago. The diamond in Donegal Town now is not very traditional, so I'm not really sure what tradition. Now, you go behind it, of course, and go behind the facade. It's all there, beautiful castle, beautiful churches, and what have you. But anyway, maybe I'm doing it a disservice. Well done to McCafferty's. Jimmy said that they do nothing for Triona Design or McGee's, etc. Of course they do. They employ lots of people who in turn shop in these places. I mentioned the weather. Yeah, proper chilly. But yet the weather forecast for 2026 is going to be the warmest on record. Need proper debate on this grey continuance weather. We also must understand when they talk about weather, whether you agree with how they get there or not, that they are not talking about you or one particular area. They're talking about the globe. And the reality is that our weather is not predicted to get hotter and warmer. It's predicted to get windier and wetter. And that will be attractive. There's a stretch across Europe that as the weather changes, whether it's because of man's activities or it's because of just the way weather is, we will become a very, whether we like the rain or not, will become a very popular place because people will be moving from parts of the world which have got to the, have heated up to the point where they're actually uninhabitable. Peter McLaughlin's with me. Hi, Peter. Thanks for holding there. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. You're talking about a stretch of road in Inishowen, Fawn to Boncranich. The R238, people might know it as either or. What is the situation? You've described it as chaos there.
Well, just referring to Sunday, it was chaos on Sunday because I don't know, there was some sort of working on, be it a burst pipe or something. But there seemed to be a lack of traffic management. There was a queue from from Beach Halt to right back down to the Harbour Inn, which is quite a distance on one side. On the other side, the queue would not be as long and wouldn't went as far as Fawn Village. But it just seems the traffic management, this happens on a regular basis when there be it roadworks, bus pipe, an accident, the road is blocked. Yeah. And if emergency services have to get up the road, it's difficult. Over 20 years ago, I had been talking to engineers and raised this issue. There's a labyrinth. The R238 goes around the peninsula. But it's due to the security issues in relation to the border. You had Muff, you had Bridgend and Calais were the main routes in and out of the peninsula. So that would have been the council's focus. But there's a labyrinth of roads in between one to the other. And when the road's blocked, cars, locals try getting through this labyrinth of roads, but the roads are very narrow. Mm. So you meet a car coming, you meet a big lorry coming, then you've got chaos in the middle of the peninsula as well. So when the roadworks will be done, there should be, well, I would be looking for a road, an alternative route through the middle of the peninsula to get us out. So you'd have that there would be, if there's any roadworks going on, you can travel and know you can get from A to B without any, without the chaos.
Because you're suggesting that that road network is there. If a little bit of extra planning went into place, traffic could move more freely. And as you say, sometimes it's about inconvenience and having to wait a bit longer or getting stuck. Other times it's life and death with emergency services and the critical response times that they try and meet. So there's a couple of elements to this, I think, is what you're saying.
Oh, definitely. It's one, you're inviting visitors into on the show and we're trying to get visitors in. And if this is happening on a regular basis and people say, oh, there was always traffic jams there, it's hard to get into Buncrana, then they'll say, we'll go somewhere else. Mm. So, and when they're doing the roadworks, you know, even if there's a bus pipe, there should be a system of traffic management, not just on the site itself where the work's been done, but through Fawn, up through an area known as the Mars or Tully Dish, that the traffic would travel one route or traffic could leave the other route. That would reduce the congestion on the smaller roads. Now, when I brought it up to engineers assured me, yes, we are looking at that issue and we're trying to widen sections of the road that would be pinch points. But very little has happened. Unless someone's building a house, the council will insist that they'll move the ditch back from the road, but nothing else is done. Mm. So when this work is done and when there would be a bust, I'd be looking at the council would have something in place that would reduce the congestion and ease access in and out of the peninsula.
All right, Peter, listen, thank you for that. Let's throw it out to our wider audience. That's Peter McLaughlin there, by the way. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. There's a possibility that people living on quiet routes may not appreciate traffic being routinely diverted past their property. I don't know. 086 60 25,000. That's we have that text line. That's why we have it. 07491 25,000, because it's your opinion that matters. Hi, Greg. Is it just my opinion, or does anyone else think the same? But has First Holy Communion become like mini weddings? I was at a communion on Saturday and was shocked at the competition between the mammies. The dresses, the tan, the makeup, etc. was breathtaking. Now, was that the mammies that were dressed up like that? I presume it wasn't the girls or boys getting the Holy Communion. No, it was the mammies they're talking about. I thought it was supposed to be the child's special day. Don't get me wrong, it's nice for us all to be well turned out for the occasion, but now it seems to be all about the mammy's image. I know one mum who had a dress and her child's communion dress made from her wedding dress, though both dresses would look similar. They believe it's crazy. Do you know, like, I understand where you're coming from and it's your opinion and I respect that. It doesn't affect or bother me. And if that's what people want to do and it makes them happy, well then, you know, I'm all for it, to be honest with you, because it's not harming anyone, is it? But maybe others, they have more stronger views than I might have. Because, of course, then maybe it creates competition, does it? I mean, do mums, this person's talking about mammies, do mammies feel under pressure going to the Holy Communion to make sure they look fantastic? I don't know. I was born on the Holloway Road. I brought up Irish and proud, returned to London for work. My son was born in East London. I dare anyone to call me or my son British or English. These racists need to get a life. And this is a reflection. Someone saying because you see, the problem is where, how far do you go back? You know, we're talking about this this Irish woman born of Somalian parents, born in this country. And then people are going, well, her parents are Somalian. Well, then what about all the footballers that you support and the footballers and all the sports people that play, or your neighbour that might be have a different skin colour? Are you saying that they're not Irish? I don't know. It's a very complicated way of looking at things. The trees on the Letterkenny Hospital roundabout are disappearing every day. Has anyone noticed this? No, I haven't. I haven't noticed that at all. But that doesn't say for a second that it is not happening. Lastly, before the break, can you please play a request for our mum and granny, Breed Melly? Breed's in Lettermacker Ward and celebrates her 70th birthday today. Have a great day from Felix, Janet, Logan and Cassie. Happy birthday, Breed. Hope you have a wonderful day. I'm sure you will.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Now, 21 minutes past 10 on this Tuesday, the 12th of May. It's time for Community Garda information, and I'm really pleased to welcome on to this item for the first time, Garda Sarah McDermott from Letterkenny Garda Station. Sarah, thank you so much for calling up to us.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, we've got quite a bit to get through, so we'll start with some appeals. And I know Gardaí are seeking the public's assistance in their investigation of an assault at in Milford.
Yes, Greg. Gardaí are appealing for the assistance of the public in connection with an alleged assault that occurred at Church Road, Milford, at approximately 1:05 a.m. on Sunday the 10th of May. A man is believed to have been assaulted at that location by another man who is not known to him. The injured man attended Letterkenny University Hospital to receive treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. If anyone witnessed this incident or if they have any relevant information, we ask them to contact Gardaí in Milford on 074-915-3060. As always, we are also appealing for dash cam footage from that area.
Investigations ongoing too into an alleged assault in Letterkenny.
Yes, Greg. Gardaí are seeking information in connection with an alleged assault that occurred at Lower Main Street, Letterkenny, in the early hours of Sunday the 10th of May. This occurred at approximately 2:50 a.m. A man reported that he was assaulted while standing at that location by another man who was wearing a white T-shirt with a Guinness logo on the front and back, blue jeans and grey and white Nike trainers. He was approximately 6 foot tall in his early 20s and had dirty blonde or brown hair. This man sustained non-life-threatening injuries, and we appeal to anyone who may have witnessed this incident to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-916-7100.
Yeah, a very good description there of the person Gardaí want to speak to. So maybe that person themselves recognises themselves and can see that it's not going to be too long before they get a knock on the door and might be proactive in that situation.
Yeah, if they wish to come forward, Greg, they can contact us in Letterkenny Garda Station.
All right, okay. Now we're also looking for witnesses to a road traffic collision at Tullahan Roundabout.
Yes, this road traffic collision involving two vehicles occurred at Tullahan Roundabout Bundoran, which is on the R267, on Saturday the 9th of May at approximately 7:15 p.m. A motorist was waiting at the roundabout when their car was rear-ended by a black Toyota Yaris with a parcel registration number of 132SO. The motorist then pulled in on the N15 when they exited the roundabout, but the driver of the Toyota Yaris failed to stop. We appeal to anyone who may have travelled along the N15, the R267 or the area of the Tullahan roundabout between 6:45 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. with a dash cam to make the footage available to us. Or if anyone witnessed this collision, they are asked to contact Ballyshannon Gardaí on 071-985-8530.
Now, some details of a very significant day of action, not just in Donegal, but sort of across a region as such. So tell us more details about what actually happened, Sarah, if you don't mind.
So on the morning of Monday, the 11th of May, 2026, more than 100 Gardaí conducted a search operation in County Donegal, County Sligo, County Monaghan and County Tyrone in conjunction with our PSNI colleagues as part of the investigations into an organised crime gang. We suspected of being involved in drug dealing and money laundering offences. The searches were conducted at 15 residential addresses in County Donegal, which was East Donegal and Letterkenny, 4 in the Sligo Town area, 1 in Monaghan and 1 in County Laois. A man in his 30s was arrested in County Donegal and is currently being detained at a station in the Garda Northwestern region under Section 50 of the Criminal Justice Act 2007. Searches were also conducted in County Tyrone by our colleagues in the Police Service of Northern Ireland. This was led by detectives from the Donegal Division, and this operation was supported by the Garda National Drug and Organised Crime Bureau, the Armed Support Unit, the Garda Dog Unit and detectives from Sligo and Monaghan. More than €26,000 in cash, £12,000 in sterling and quantities of cocaine, cannabis and tablets with an estimated street value of €40,000 were seized by Gardaí during these searches, as well as mobile phones and other electronic devices. At present, investigations are ongoing.
Okay, interesting. A big, big operation and the beginning of, I'd imagine, a greater effort to disrupt this type of activity, which is so destructive, not just in our community, but right across the country. Now, there's a courier card scam knocking about, Sarah. What could you tell us about this?
The courier card scam is a prevalent fraud where criminals are impersonating bank staff, tricking victims into handing over their debit or credit cards to a fake courier which is sent to their home. You may receive a realistic-looking text message claiming to be from your bank, warning of suspicious activity or unauthorised transactions on your account and urging you to provide to call a number that is provided to a link. A frayed fraud agent calls you and sounds extremely professional, referencing fabricated transactions to build your trust. The caller may already be in possession of some of your personal details. To protect your account or assist with the security investigation, they convince you to physically hand over your bank card. They then arrange for a courier, a taxi, a delivery driver or a fake bank representative to come to your home and to collect your bank card. To access the funds, they may then trick you into revealing your PIN number over the phone or by entering it into your keypad. You never use the phone numbers provided in unexpected text messages or voicemails. It is important to know that financial institutions and banks will never send a courier, a taxi or a representative to your home to collect your bank card, cash or valuable items. Bank staff, when they contact you, will never ask you to reveal your full PIN number, whether verbally or using your keypad. If you're targeted, what you do is you immediately hang up the phone. If you receive a suspicious call about your account, you hang up, you call your bank using a verified number, such as the one on the back of your debit card or your credit card. You also report this to your bank if you believe you were the victim or have given away any of your details. You call the bank fraud team immediately using the verified number, and you always report the incident to Gardaí if you have fallen victim to this or any type of scam involving fraud.
I sometimes, Sarah, now, well, I kind of know the situation now, but in the past got fraud warnings from my own bank via a mobile number. And I've got to the point now where I sort of disregard almost any message and then just contact the bank myself. Because, you know, I just didn't expect it to come from an 086 number. As it turns out, it was legit and you text back Y or N or something along those lines. But at this point now, if I get a call from a lending institution or a bank, I don't hang up and ring them back. You know, obviously make the contact with them. Secondly, do you think that maybe when our learned friend Garda Grani is putting things together, this might be too many words? Do you think that was...
Not going to comment on that one, Greg.
We're in for a treat now because we're going to do the Garda recruitment campaign, page 77. No, I mean, yes, and this is really, really important information. And,
it is very important information,
this is
Greg.
These recruitment campaigns are coming thick and fast. There's a lot of recruitment going on, and there's a relatively small window, isn't there, with this one? So if people have an interest in joining on Garda Síochána, listen up. So what is this campaign at the moment, Sarah?
It's a new recruitment campaign which opened yesterday, Monday the 11th May, and it will remain open until Wednesday the 3rd of June at 3 p.m. Applications should be submitted via www.publicjobs.ie. Now, there is a new element to this campaign in that candidates with a musical background are encouraged to apply, as the Garda Band is open to new members at present. Candidates who indicate their interest in the application will be considered for a future audition for the Garda Síochána Band following successful completion of Garda training and the probationary period. Now, Garda trainees will get paid while earning a degree and having the cost of accommodation and meals covered. Trainees receive €354 per week during the 36-week programme at the Garda College, where accommodation and meals are provided free of charge. Graduates earn a Level 7 Bachelor of Arts in Applied Policing accredited by the University of Limerick. Now, Greg, we have some recruitment information evenings. The first one will take place at Buncrana Garda Station this evening, May the 12th, between 6pm and 8pm, where you feel free to call in and talk to Gardaí there about a career within an Garda Síochána. Another Garda recruitment information stand will be held at Letterkenny Shopping Centre on Tuesday, May the 19th, between 1pm and 2pm, and at the Courtyard Shopping Centre on Tuesday, May the 26th, between 1pm and 2pm. And everyone is welcome to call in to get more information in relation to this. Also, if none of these times suit you, feel free to call any Garda station if you have any questions about the current recruitment campaign, or visit publicjobs.ie or the Garda Síochána website. Also, if you keep an eye on the Garda Síochána Donegal Facebook page, there's further information available on that.
And that quite literally is about if someone is just on the brink and wonder, is this for me? It's literally actually speaking to other guards that do the job.
Yes.
It really, you know, I mean, I know there's more with the information stands, but that really is almost what that call boils down to. Do you know what I mean?
It is,
so, and I know yous are all very open to that. And pun intended, if you can play music in this round of recruitment, it is a string in your bow. Right, now, Go Purple Day is back. What's happening this year?
Well, Go Purple Day, Greg, is an initiative by An Garda Síochána with the support of domestic abuse services nationwide to help raise awareness about domestic abuse and about the supports that are available. So Go Purple Day takes place this Friday, May the 15th, and a number of events have been organised across Donegal to mark the occasion. Gardaí in Lifford will host a coffee morning and flower planting event at Lifford Garda Station between 11am and 1pm. In Inishowen, Gardaí will team up with Lifeline Inishowen that day to host a coffee morning at the Lifeline Inishowen premises in Carndonagh between 11am and 1pm. Also, a coffee morning will be held at Donegal Town Garda Station that day between 11am and 1pm. And also, a Go Purple Day event will be held at Enid Niamh Padraic, Bunbeg, between 11am and 1pm on Friday. As always, full details of these events may be viewed on the Garda Síochána Donegal Facebook page, and everyone is welcome to call into any of these venues listed to show their support.
Yeah, and indeed, it's an opportunity, and I think we talked about this, about that Lifford event last time, or wherever it might be the opportunity really for you to, if you're listening to this and are a victim of domestic violence, to reach out and speak to someone who can lend you an ear and perhaps guide you in the right direction. Now, there is an Emergency Services Day coming up on May 17th, finally, Sarah.
Yes, Greg, the Desert Igni and Dunree Foraiga clubs are hosting an emergency services showcase at Fort Dunree on Sunday the 17th of May between 12pm and 3pm, and An Garda Síochána will take part. This is a fantastic community event highlighting the work carried out by emergency and charitable services across Inishowen. It promises to be a great family day out with the opportunity to meet its emergency services personnel, to see the emergency vehicles and equipment up close, and to learn more about the vital services that are available locally. Please come along and support the young people from Desert Igni and Dunree Foraiga clubs and the various organisations taking place, such as the RNLI, the Fire Services, the Army, An Garda Síochána, Buncrana First Responders, the Civil Defence, the Coast Guard and the Irish Red Cross will all be present that day.
Yep, everybody welcome. It'll be really well attended because lots and lots of people like the machinery. I can just see them battering the staff out of the way to get at the machines. but no, and do you know what? It's a great way to normalise young person's interaction with emergency services as well, and have a better understanding of it and see all the top of the range gear and all that kind of stuff. Fantastic. Sarah McDermott, Letterkenny Garda Station, thank you so much for calling up.
Thank you, Greg. Really do
appreciate it. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 12th of May. It's back with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. And if you missed anything in there, or you want to listen back or get some dates or information that you may have missed, it'll be podcast, of course, from 11:30 on our website. And you can watch it back too on our socials and on Garda Síochána's Donegal Facebook page there as well, where you can get more information, as we mentioned and as Sarah mentioned there, about that latest recruitment drive that is ongoing. Some of your comments here: I fully support the action of the ambulance personnel. The paramedics saved my grandchild's life by on-the-spot treatment. They do amazing life-saving work and are amazing people. And they really, there's absolutely no doubt that they do. And I think all of us believe that people should be treated fairly. That's all they want. Hi there, Greg. Has there been any public consultation about the new proposed start times at ATU Donegal from September 2026? Classes will start at 9 a.m. I'd imagine this may cause traffic chaos from a concerned student. I'm not sure. What is the normal start time? I mean, that sounds like a pretty regular start time for a lot of business as well. Is that what we're saying? That maybe, you know, it could increase traffic congestion? As I say, let us know what was the previous start time. Maybe you might understand the logic of starting at 9. Ree Donegal Town, I agree with the councillor. Huge pubs like McCafferty's come into towns, suck up the business from everyone else and give nothing back. Well, you see, like, again, I don't want to sound like I'm batting for McCafferty's here. We've contacted themselves, but that's not really how it works. You know, I was in Donegal Town for a long, 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 long time. I've been in Donegal Town my entire life. Firstly, about giving nothing back. The amount of people that are employed, the amount of additional revenue that comes in as well. You know, people go and eat in local restaurants and all that. I'd be very interested to see what the business community think. But this, I can't even read out that you saying they give nothing back, because I know that that's not, simply not true, you know, in terms of supporting the music industry and all that type of stuff. Not just them, but all of them. They're allowed to open until late, creating huge social problems. But that, of course, listen, if it's not going to be they open late, there's been late, or there used to be, you might remember if you're from Donegal Town, what was it, on Thursday night, there was... what was it called? Nero's. It was called other things. You know, Friday night, then Saturday night, Nero's, then Sunday night, the Abbey. The people used to... Do you remember people used to go out? I used to go out till 2 o'clock on a Sunday night. They used to have a disco on a Sunday night there. They'd have bands like Love Bug or whomever might be playing. And you'd go to it and you would stay out till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and then get up for work the next day. I can't even dream of doing that now. But that was the norm. Sunday nights, nightclubs, crazy. But it was hugely popular. The place used to be packed. But I do recall when the crowds changed and then eventually it died away. But that was a thing. I don't know if it was anywhere else, but a packed nightclub on a Sunday night and everyone getting up for work or school the next morning. On the Dublin Rose, I believe the texter is saying about a person born in Ireland of foreign extraction, it doesn't automatically make them Irish, no matter where the Irish went. I suppose that at this point then we're talking about how many generations of family. Can someone with a Somalian background, if they're eighth generation Irish, can they be Irish? Or are you saying that someone who, because obviously this lady is first generation, are you saying that someone who's not white can never ever be Irish? Or if she has kids and those kids have kids and those kids have kids and it's like eighth or ninth generation or five or sixth generation, 100 years from now, and they retain their ethnic characteristics, they still can never, ever be Irish, or what is the situation there? But this caller says, no matter where the Irish went, even to this day, they're called Irish by their adopted countries, not British or Americans. Well, that's not true. Irish American is a phrase, and I have Irish family, aunts and uncles who have kids in England, and I know they count themselves as English. I know that as an absolute fact because it's my own family. So whilst their parents are Irish, they themselves count themselves as English because they marry an English person, they have a kid, and they're all English. So I disagree with much of what you said there, respectfully, if you don't mind me saying so. I think really, is this coming down to how somebody looks, really? Or maybe just let me know how many generations of Irish would someone of Somalian descent have to be before they'd be classed as Irish? I'm not woke. I'm not all this. I'm not all that, right? I just want to have a genuine conversation because this is happening in the, you know, anonymously in the depth of social media, people, you know, typing stuff. Let's have the conversation publicly and find out, well, why are people saying that? Or do people really feel that? Councillor Troy Gallagher of the Labour Party, good morning to you. Congratulations. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, Greg. Thanks very much. Thanks to all your listeners. Delighted to be here.
Yep, you successfully defended your council seat in the Islington Council in London. It was a tough old election for your party. Lots of your colleagues losing seats right across the island. I mean, so it's bittersweet, obviously. You know, you're delighted for yourself, but you can see also, too, your party has taken an absolute kicking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really horrible election, Greg. The worst one since 2006, the post-Iraq war election. It's normally elections are fought in local issues and you can bring it through, but it was completely national the whole way. In my own ward, which is a working class ward, we were knocking on doors. Now, we started this campaign back in February. The long campaign lasted to February 26 and then went into short campaign. We had done every single house and flats six times and that. The Green Party feeling against us did not do one leaflet, did not do one door knocking. And the lead candidate said to me, Troy, you've none to fear for us because we're focusing on the target wards. We won't be door knocking, doing nothing. Best of luck to you. And they managed to reduce my majority to 180. They got 1,800 votes between them for not door knocking. And here we were struggling to get people out to vote. It was completely Keir Starmer. Now, I don't use this word lightly. I hate to say it because he is a decent man, but it was the hatred on the doorstep about Keir Starmer.
Why is he so disliked?
I think, well, my personal feeling is that people are feeling that he hadn't delivered on the change that he was promised. They gave him the vote, they lent him the vote, call it what you will, back 2 years ago. But despite that there, the change that they've seen, they expected did not happen. They knew it would take time for growth, but the mishaps and the U-turns between two-child benefit cap, the welfare issues, just felt they were saying, look, Troy, if it means you have to lose your seat to get this man to go, that is a price worth paying to get this man out.
Yeah, well, we've seen calls for him to resign. Last time I checked, it's probably more, it was in the high 70s of MPs, Labour MPs, that wanted him out. He's told the Cabinet this morning that he's going to get on with governing. So he seems to be resisting those calls. It seems impossible, whether you wish he does heed the calls or you don't, it would be one of the biggest political escapes ever if he survives this, surely.
It would be. I think things have changed dramatically since the speech yesterday. It was make or break. It didn't cut the mustard. It was very much more of the same. And from last night, as you see now, it's the drip drip. And now that the ministers and cabinet got involved, it reminds me very much the days of the end of Thatcher and a bit of the psychodrama of Boris's last days, 24 hours. I think in my own personal view, Greg, I think first of all is the response from the rest from the response from the electorate has been very, very clear. They're not happy with him or the direction. I think that, but I do think we need to have whatever he decides to do in the next 5-6 hours, it needs to be done in the best interest of the country,
but
not party.
What is the alternative? Who comes in? I mean, let's face it, whoever comes in are coming into a country, right, that is struggling, has never really recovered from its exit from the EU. Everything Brexit. That Brexit, everything that was promised through Brexit, it really hasn't been delivered. So really, you know, you can change the captain of the Titanic, right, but it still is going to hit the iceberg, is it not? Like, who could replace him and how could they meaningfully change direction or policy with the tools that they have available to them?
Well, first of all, let me take the last part first, if you don't mind. I think the issue is on the how and the what, that to have a correction on the direction. Because at the present minute, it does feel that it is too much in favour of the establishment, not focused on normal working people making their lives better. You're absolutely right. Whoever does take over will have to face the same challenges. So that is the first issue, that, you know, there's going to be no big magic. But it does mean a refocus and a realign of both what the policy is contained within the manifesto and what the actual impact is towards local people. And I think on the latter part, that's where the focus needs to be. Bringing in local government like Islington, we have done some fantastic things and we're deemed a very good council, you know, and shaped national policy. Giving local government the voice, who are at the front line with residents, to be able to say, here's the support that's needed. Here's some of the key issues, like Thames Water should be nationalised. I mean, that's making a key blockbuster profits despite flooding everywhere. Residents.
I understand. Trying not to cut across you, but it's just because of time.
Of course.
You know, this election, these local elections weren't fought on that. Really, if the that's truth right. be told, right? Reform have gone from nothing a short time ago to a very, very well-represented organisation right across the island of Britain, right? So, I mean, really, if Labour are to rebuild, go into a new direction and win any election, they're going to have to look at what Reform's doing, aren't they? Because it's not going to be about some of the stuff you've talked about as much as you might like it to be. It's going to be about very black and white, divisive, one side or other points of view and issues.
I don't agree entirely with you on that point, Greg. And the reason I don't is because I think far too often we've been too focused on Reform and on the black and white. We've been ignoring the Greens. And the Greens have come in and taken what you may deem as the populist centre-left, left-wing policies that appeal to the wider working class and normal working people. And I think what we also need to do now is see the real keeping an eye rightly on Reform, but similarly being able to attack the Greens and say to them, actually hold them to account and be able to give our own policies that appeal to the wider. Because don't forget, Labour means Labour. The clue is in the name. As I said to many people, it is about working people. It was built for working people and working class, and we need to be able to demonstrate those values.
Never underestimate voters, but I just feel the Greens. Like, I haven't heard much real green stuff coming from the Greens. If I'm completely honest with you, and I just thought it feels to me like just it's a decent holding vote. Until such time as, you know, maybe the main political parties sort them out. I think in a general election, if the Greens were challenged really on green policies and what they actually stand for, you know, on a national level, I think they might become somewhat undone in their messaging.
I agree, and they'll be facing much more scrutiny now, both in terms as running councils, as councillors of committees, and on their wider national policy, and focus on Zach Polanski. As you've seen last week, he's come under a number of heat for a number of issues. Could I just briefly mention one thing,
if
you don't mind, and that is about the level of toxicity in this campaign. It was, apart from the level of abuse, threats towards councillors and candidates, we have a thing called Operation Ford, which now councillors get a little thing to carry around to press in the event if they're attacked. And we ring the police if we receive death threats.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. So, and then they get them down immediately. And even around here, the people were going to the new candidates and saying, actually, in choice language, that we know who you are. We're going to burn you alive and get the hell out of here.
No, that's okay.
And equally, one of my next councillors recovering from cancer, she was out leaflet and cyclist got along the thing and whacked her on the shoulder and gave her verbal abuse for being out canvassing.
Yeah, so, I mean, now you've been elected or representing Labour since 2010. You can judge a change. You've seen, obviously, a change in the rhetoric and what's...
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would get involved in politics at this point, to be honest with you. But how do you sort that out, though?
Well, I mean, there is having the conversations and being able to get there and call it out for what it is. I don't believe that is representative of the wider community. I believe there is some people who are just level of anger. And again, when I was called a child killer and being complicit in genocide in Gaza, when I challenged that on the doorsteps about what we've done to deal with those issues, People say, oh, I didn't realise that. Thank you for
explaining. I know, but it's also, but for certain people out there, as soon as you even start trying to explain it, just they're not going to change the
views. No, switch off.
All right, Troy, listen, congratulations again.
Thanks, and a
very competitive borough and in a very interesting election. Look after yourself. That's Troy Gallagher there of the Labour Party, Letterkenny, of course, but now based over in London. Have a fantastic Tuesday, everyone. We're going to chat to you again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m.